Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host, Vlad Settler, along with Dr. Matty Wood. I'm sorry, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis. Matt, what's going on, brother?
Very nice. Well done. It is Fat Tuesday. So happy Fat Tuesday and Mardi Gras to all that celebrate. I've been to New Orleans before on a cross-country road trip when I was on my wild side in college. So shout out to the people in New Orleans and in Louisiana. They have the best hospitality. So I hope that they are all having a great time down there.
Yes. Happy Fat Tuesday, everybody. And we are here recording on Tuesday, the 21st of February. It is the episode about outfielders part two. Last week we covered the outfielders between 1 to 150 overall. Today we're going to cover the rest, essentially 150 to 450 overall, covering the first 30 rounds of a typical 15 team draft, typically NFBC focused. Of course, the analysis extends to all, so that's what we're going to talk about today. Lots of outfielders to get to, so we're going to kind of get right to it. Real quick, wanted to mention that spring training is here. We have everyone in the best shape of their lives, and we have injuries already. We have games starting this Friday, so here in a couple of days, going to get some spring training games, maybe a little bit of DFS action, eventually some WBC, and then the season. It's almost March. Everything is almost here. It's coming really quickly, but so far it's been a fantastic February.
I know that some people do like to highlight the best shape of life, but do we ever, not that we want to body shame anybody, but they are professional athletes. Is there ever anybody that you look like that you know, next year during what usually Fan Fest, right? That's kind of when you get your first glimpse of these players. And the one that sticks to me this year was Trent Grisham. He kind of had this thick mustache. He was slouched down in his chair. And he had jeans and cowboy boots on, I believe, of some sort. He looked real relaxed, which is good if you're a baseball player. But his photo kind of made me laugh just a little bit. Maybe we'll even get to Trent Grisham at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a fade on Grisham, I think, for quite some time. So, if he's not coming in the best shape of his life, let's drop him down another round. So everything you can access at our website, ftnfantasy.com. We are updating projections for the entire player pool, top 500 rankings, underdog rankings, cut line rankings, everything you could possibly want, all of our dynasty columns as well, Matthew's Juice worth the squeeze, lots of really great stuff, and of course the positional tiers articles that have been coming out. So definitely check us out, ftnfantasy.com/MLB. And if you'd like a 20% discount, please use FTN Pod. Of course, you can pay full price if you want, but might as well take us up on that little discount. So outfielders, part two. We're about to keep going into one more tier last week. And you alluded to something, to a specific player. So what we're talking about here, first of all, this is the fifth tier of outfielders between rounds 11 to 13. These are guys that typically go in about in around 150 to 200 overall. Some interesting names here, but I guess kick us off here with this tier, some of the players in this tier, and the one guy you were going to bring up right away.
Yeah, so looking at it according to ADP over the last few weeks, we have Andrew Vaughn, Mitch Haniger, Ian Happ, Brandon Nimmo, Harrison Bader, Lars Nootbaar, Cody Bellinger, Oscar Gonzalez, Jeff McNeil, Alex Verdugo, Riley Green, Masataka Yoshida, and Joey Meneses. And the player that we are going to highlight, or that I sort of kind of tickled tried to sort of...
You tickled.
Yeah, just a little bit. It's Ian Happ. And I look at your VDP, and which is... It's really aesthetically pleasing. So you do the positions, the team, player name, where you rank them. And then next to that, you have the ADP. So it kind of comes out to where you're going to have a differential, and each one's color coded. So it's awesome to see where you're at compared to the market, which if you're a fantasy analyst or a fantasy baseball player, especially playing at the NFBC, I think that you should be doing some sort of this on your own as well, to kind of see where you're at in comparison to the market. But with that being said, the player is Ian Happ, and your differential or delta is negative 19. So in a 15-team league, you're at least around outside of the ADP, which is right around 150, which is okay. You've got to, I've, you know, said I'm out on a lot of guys, and I'm quite different on a lot of people here, but I'm actually probably somewhere on the opposite end in differential. So where your negative 19 is red, mine would probably be somewhere on the positive side of 19 in the green. And so with that being said, so Ian Happ, I can go into as to why. So he's going to hit third on the Cubs. The Cubs brought in Dansby Swanson. They bring in Cody Bellinger. They bring in Trey Mancini. They've got Nico Horner, who's, you know, kind of showed improvements last year. So overall, we can say that the offensive context is good, and he's going to be stapled into right of the heart of it. He played nearly every game possible that you could imagine. I believe it was 155 to 158 games that he played. So he eclipsed over the 650-plus plate appearances, which is awesome to see. And then on top of that, he's sort of one of those guys that I just, it's a pick where you don't, sure, you're not going to win something today with him. It's like a Jorge Polanco or a Gleyber Torres or a Brian Reynolds, where he's not killing you anywhere, and he's at least above average pretty much everywhere. And then there's still some room for improvement, I believe, when looking at his metrics and statistics. So last year, people are going to say, okay, well, what about the power? That dip finally, his barrel rate was at 6.5%, which we don't like. But his career barrel rate was 10.5%. And the year before that in 2021, it was at 11.2%. So double digits over the last couple seasons and in the career, it's 10.5%. He has an optimal launch angle for his career at 11.7. And last season, he had a career high contact rate and in zone contact rate at 83.7%. And that came with a career low strikeout rate at 23% and a career low swinging strike rate at 11.8%. So we're now seeing a veteran player kind of coming into his own, where we did actually see elite power metrics prior to this. So we now have somebody that can kind of control the bat. He's making better contact. He has good plate discipline. He's improving in all of those departments. But now we're kind of knocking him for the power. He has a 40% plus hard hit rate, and the previous ISOs were 261, 300, 247, and 209. So if we are kind of grabbing all of his isolated power metrics, last year's outlier or was the outlier. So I think that we could potentially see what we saw last year with a bit more power, and the speed has always been there and it's sustainable. So over the last two seasons, 18 stolen bases, that's 9 apiece each season. And the sprint speed has basically stayed the same. So in 2018, it was 27.7. And last year in 2022, it was 27.9. So it actually went up just a tiny, tiny bit last year. So it's basically stayed the same. So with the new shift rules, he's hitting the ball hard, right? 40%+ of the time. He pulls the ball 42% of the time. Some people want to regress, you know, the expected batting average that was pretty low, and looking at the BABIP, but okay, so he's a switch hitter. He does hit most of the time from the left-handed side. He's pulling the ball. He's hitting the ball on the ground sometimes. So he's going to get lucky just a little bit there. So if you want to regress a couple things, I think the batting average potentially could stay intact where it's at too. So going above the public projections that you're seeing. So all in all, he's just one of those dudes that 20, 25 home runs. He's done the 25 plus home run seasons once or twice before. And then with the new rules, with the pickoff and the bigger base and the pitch clock, maybe we do see 10 plus stolen bases. Plus, I believe the Cubs are now finally wanting to start to pay their guys in-house. And Ian Happ has been rumored to be one of those. So he's certainly not that he's going to try harder, but the motivation is there to sort of pat the back of the baseball stats. We've seen that in the past with players kind of looking for their bag. And I think we could see that with Ian Happ. So is 25-12 out of the question with a 270 batting average, hitting third in the Cubs lineup every single day? So the counting stat should be there. It's pretty good to me.
Yeah, I mean it's a solid argument. I like him fine. There really is something when you have a lot of really sharp players, a lot of people that I respect in the industry, high stakes guys, analysts who are a big fans of Ian Happ. They bought in last year and seem to be buying in again this year. Maybe I'm low on the projections. I think probably on the RBIs and runs, have a combined 160, probably a little bit on the low end for a guy that if we expect him to hit third all season, it should be a higher number so long as he stays healthy. Last year on the Razzball Player Raider, he was 97th player overall. This year I have him somewhere around 90, as far as the overall hitters are concerned. So just on hitter rankings alone, I've got him there behind guys like Ty France, behind guys like Andrew Benintendi. Maybe I'm wrong. It could very well be. But so far, six seasons, a guy that's never hit more than 25 homers or drove in more than 75 runs or even more than 10 stolen bases in his career. A 249 hitter. And that's only after a career best 271 last year. His actual expected batting average last season, 239. Not a big deal with the barrel rate. It was down 6.5. He just wasn't barreling as high as much as usual. Obviously hard hit rate is fine. Career rate, barrel rate previous to that was over 10%. And then again, a subpar hitter versus lefties. Really hits the righties well, but against lefties, over the course of his career, a 145 ISO, 94 WRC plus, and against both sides, against both handedness of pitchers, a strikeout rate around 29%. I do think there's obviously some improvement there with the lineup. I do think lineup context has improved. I think if he does stick hitting third between Dansby Swanson and Suzuki, it's very nice. Home park is nice. Lineup context is solid. I don't see a massive breakout at age 28. I don't see him stealing 20 bases, hitting 30 plus home runs. Could it happen? Yep, of course. But just in that range, and especially for the price, it just sort of feels fully priced to me. And just somebody that, I don't love taking guys that could potentially hurt me in batting average in that range. And again, all this to say that I could be dead wrong. Just for me, I will not land on any Ian Happs on any of my team. And one more thing, by the way, it could be, maybe, who knows where biases come from, right? It could be, what is it that I, year after year, don't like Ian Happ, right? I mean, it worked for me not liking Nomar Mazara for many years.
Sure.
It did work for me liking, Carlos Correa or whomever it may be, where you nailed things. I don't know. Maybe it was like one bad day in DFS that is somewhere deep down in my subconscious where he screwed me over. Like, I don't really know. And I don't know if that's it. I try to think that of it as objectively as possible. But for me, there's just other outfielders I like more in that range.
Maybe you have too many friends texting you that they like him. And so it's just kind of the black sheep narrative, right? You're kind of like, everybody else is in on him. Fuck it. I'm going to go the other way.
Yeah, but you know what? Part of it's like a stubbornness. Like, no, you smart people, you are all wrong. I am right. Sure. This will be, it will probably end up somewhere in the middle on it, I think.
Hey, it's been beneficial in the past to be like that. And it's also, you live by it and you die by it, so to speak. So,
So another guy you mentioned in this range, I'm sorry, anything else on half?
Nope, we're good to go. The one thing actually out of the whole narrative here I want to highlight again is being different from the market. It's important to do that. And we're obviously on two opposite ends of the spectrum for him. Whereas the ADP is sort of at 150, I would go above it. You would go substantially below it. But I think, it's good to have differences and discussions about being on opposite ends and being able to debate players like that and doing your own research and seeing where you differentiate from the market. That's a big part of being successful in your fantasy baseball leagues.
Another guy I wanted to mention in this range, and it doesn't seem like a lot of people are all that interested. It's almost like, okay, I'll do it. I'll click on it here. He's a round past his ADP. And that's because he's a San Francisco Giant. It's not a good home park for power, for hitters altogether. And there's just not really a lot of excitement about a 30-plus-year-old outfielder for the Giants in a very subpar lineup, is for what it seems. So I did want to mention that Mitch Haniger is the guy that we're talking about here, the new member of the team there. Dude hits the ball really hard. So the last three seasons, a 45% hard hit rate, scoring up barrels at a 12% rate. And then last season, a career best 92 mile per hour average exit velocity. I'm usually more interested in the average than the max is there. And really was hitting the ball harder than ever. Launch angle right in that sweet spot, 14 to 18 degrees. At least that's what it is for me. I'm not a professional hitter. not nor a professional hitting coach. I'm not Robert von Skoyok. Tough hitter park, yes, for the hitters, for the home park. Remember, Mitch Haniger is just one season removed, 2021, from doing major damage in Seattle, in T-Mobile Park there in 2021. 39 home runs, 210 runs in RBI combined. So obviously probably lead his team, hopefully across the board in the three sort of middle categories there, homers, runs, RBIs, give or take a few. And then most run RBI projections combined have him somewhere around 150. It feels like that's a little bit of a little underselling him. So that's those are my first thoughts about Mitch Haniger. I'm not opposed to clicking the button there in the 150, 200 range.
Yeah. So shout out Cal Poly alumni Mitch Haniger. So he went to college where I previously lived. And I think that you used to kind of give me some crap about kind of being a Mitch Haniger fanboy in the past. So there is a narrative to where I am a fan of Mitch Haniger. And I have here on our outline all these pros, but you basically mentioned pretty much the good of Mitch Haniger. So I don't need to reiterate that. But then I kind of have this office space thought in my head of what would you say you'd do here when you look at his overall profile. So he does have these high ceiling seasons, but in between there, he missed all of 2020 with strained abs, and he's missed over 110 games last year for an ankle sprain. And you kind of touched on the park factor. So even though T-Mobile Park in Seattle was below average at -3% in regards to home run factor, his new park in San Francisco at Oracle Park is -18%. So now you have a -15% differential. So we could potentially maybe see just a little downfall there with the negative shift in park factor, which is hard to think of because he's leaving Seattle. Projections have him in the power department anywhere from like 21 to 24. So if you look at the bat, steamer, bat X, VDP, I had your projection up. Where did it go? Oh, gosh darn it.
I should know them by heart, right?
I have every single one of them.
Whatever they have, I have more.
Everyone's 85
runs, 23 homers, 86 or
23. Yeah. So I was, you're right in the same 21 to 24. And, so he's not going to give you stolen bases, right? We could all agree on that. Even if we're in a full blown debate panel, no one's going to argue that he's going to just all of a sudden steal bases. So he's not giving you stolen bases. The batting average, are we going to call that average in this day of context, maybe last season? But moving forward without the shift, the lefties, they're going to get a bump. BABIPs are going to go up, right? So could he potentially be below average in batting average? Possibly. And then the team context, I don't think is all that great. I would argue that it's pretty much below average. Tack on the park factor. And again, what would you say you do here? Not from a real life perspective, but from a fantasy perspective. So even if you're buying in on projections, I mean, what is this? 23 home runs, an average with average counting stats. And this is, that's the problem with projections, right? And average and with the counting stats is we're going to say that Mitch Haniger is going to get 160. That's like him playing all the time, and he's got not a CVS list of injuries, but I mean he has them. And I'll even dismiss the ruptured testicle as that's sort of bad luck.
That was like the downfall. That was basically missed like a year plus. That's when it all started.
Well, I mean he's missed 362 days total on the IL from 27 to 22. I mean, that is something, even if you subtract the 100 and whatever it was, 16 with the testicle injury, which is just obviously not something that you're going to think that's going to happen again. So there is missed time, though, right? Abs and the ankle, et cetera. I don't know, man. I like power guys, and he's possessed, 200 plus ISOs and stuff like that. But again, I don't know. No speed here and not an above at batting average. And
I will add one more thing.
People are going to love him, and that's fine. Yeah.
I mean, to your point, a big negative, I think the Giants are going to start off pretty slow. Like I haven't dove dived into many schedules. But yes, the Giants schedule, man, in April, it's going to make people want to just like jump off the plank and not, you know, probably have some Conforto droppers and stuff. I mean, check out the quality of starting pitchers. If you just think about these opponents and who they're facing. So in that first month, first 5-6 weeks, they're going to get the Yankees rotation, the White Sox, the Dodgers, the Mets, the Cardinals, the Padres, the Astros, and the Brewers. That's bad. That's rough. That's like, it's almost like on purpose.
Now, would you kind of agree that when you look at his projections too, even your projections or the public projections, if we wanted to bump up some of his counting stats, because even let's say Steamer has 147, let's go on the higher sides, like on the 160 plus side of some of the projections. Isn't that saying like this dude's staying healthy all year? Which is kind of a hard bet to make with somebody like him. I mean, he's 32. I don't know. He's had previous injuries. He's going to a new team. We always highlight the guys with big contracts going to new teams, but I mean, it's still a new team for him. It's a new division, new park, bad park. I don't know. I'm just probably not going to have any.
I mean, we could talk about Happ and Poniger this entire time. We have so many guys to get through. Wanted to just anyone else in this range. I mean, I think Cody Mellinger is a great unknown. I don't think there's really much to untap there. I will say Oscar Gonzalez. I was a little bit surprised. I thought he had a lot higher of a contact rate last season than he did. It's quite possible that 294, 296, whatever he hit, and maybe a little lucky. And then Masataka Yoshida is a little bit of an unknown as well. And then I was reading just yesterday that perhaps he's not just straight up locked in as the leadoff man. And that would make a lot of sense just coming into the new league, like, you know, give Alex Verdugo or some other, forgot who else it was there, to give an opportunity to lead off as well. So this is an interesting tier. I mean, obviously, I think, like, you know, Brandon Nimmo, just by the essence of being the leadoff man, if he stays there all year, even if he's not running, has a lot of value, is going to score a lot of runs. So there are guys here that fit a specific need. Jeff McNeil, if you need some batting average really badly at this point in the draft. Otherwise, I don't think there's really a need much to be drafting him. But in general, it's a very unsexy fantasy group. I don't know if I'm going to be doing a lot of shopping here.
I don't either. But if you are, which is fine. So actually, there's quite a bit here. So Lars Nootbaar, let's real quick with him. I think shout out to the people that drafted early and did their research early and found the market inefficiency, right? They kind of noticed that he was going a lot later than he should be from the early draft. So they realized with his metrics and his improvements that he made in plate discipline with his power and potentially having, I wouldn't call it opposite-handedness of splits, but he's okay. He's pretty good. And so he's one of the bigger risers actually in all of the outfield this offseason thus far. So it's okay where he's at now. I wouldn't disagree with his current market. But I just think that sooner than later, if we continue to take off on him, there's going to become a breaking point where I think we're going to be expecting too much out of him. And then with Brandon Nimmo, it's hard to expect any speed moving forward. He finally had a healthy season. I'm not necessarily confident in the power. So he had 16 home runs last year, I believe. So over the last two seasons, though, that comes with a 145 and a 159 ISO. He's had a career high of 9 stolen bases, and that was in 2018. So after the injuries were removed last year, he didn't really run. And then is he just above average in two categories? So he leads off for the Mets. If he stays healthy, he's above average in runs and he's above average in batting average. Is he below average in stolen bases? Is he below average in RBIs and home runs? I think so. And the thing that we get to with guys like Nimmo or even Stephen Kwan earlier, right? And we were in disagreement on Stephen Kwan. We get to a point where we tell ourselves, well, I need this. I need this category. I need something specific, right, to kind of fulfill your roster construction. But for me, and looking at somebody like Brandon Nimmo, I'm sorry to say, but I kind of think you fucked up your draft at this point if you're telling yourself that you need albeit, yes, leadoff hitter with runs. We want the volume, but I think you should have been just drafting those kind of guys all the way through here is the volume. You guys, you at this point in the draft, you're in round 11, maybe 11, 12. You should have had like runs and obviously like plate discipline and average. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm such a boring guy. I should be at this point. If I'm really needing, like, let's say stolen bases or something in particular, like I'm hoping it's that, and I'm not looking to weight it on average at this point. Like, I think you kind of, I just the way I build. So for me, like, I'm not looking at a player like this with this profile at that point. Like, I've already kind of secured volume and average, or I would hope that I've done that. Go ahead.
It's an interesting exercise. So I realize, and you can slow it down when you are in the DCs and you're doing the slow drafts and really think about things, because if you're just laser focused on, I'm in round 11, I need runs, right? Like, that's a very narrow frame of mind, right? You have to look at the whole easel or the whole painting and figure out how you're going to sort of put it together. And you're really sort of selling yourself short, right? If you want Nimmo at that point, it's because you like him, you think he's going to produce a profit, or right? You can't just be like, oh, I need runs. This is what I need now. Like, first of all, as you mentioned, if you are short on runs at that point in the draft, or you kind of feel like it, your team probably isn't in a good place at that point. But also, you don't want every pick to be trying to fill a deficiency into your spreadsheet to get to an 80th percentile zone, right? You have to be more forward thinking and look out. I remember this draft that I'm doing. I think it's the 1K DC. Lots of really sharp players in there. And I'm looking at it like, well, I kind of really like, what was it, Nootbaar? He's around past his ADP. I kind of really want him. And then I'm thinking, but wait, there are a few guys. Like, I don't need to fill my outfield 4 or 5 now. There are guys that are comparable 100 picks later. Let me fill other needs. Let me get to a more comfortable roster construction or build that I want, right? Because it's such a, every new pick is sort of a new jumping off point, but you don't want to be like scrambling like every round trying to just fill, oh, now I'm short on runs. Oh, wait, now I'm short on stolen bases, and you're just kind of running around and chasing your own tail.
If you want Brandon Nimmo, I know this is kind of, it's not that easy, but dude, just take Alex Verdugo 20 plus picks later. Please just trust me. Trust me on that one. I promise. And if you're adamant that I'm wrong in that regard, we can make a 1v1 personal bet on that. Yeah.
We don't get that enough in pods. Like, dude, like, bro, trust me on this. Just do it. And if not, I will pay you out later in one way.
Put my money where my mouth is. I'll stay true to that. I don't like to beat around the bush like some people like to do. So if you don't like my takes, that's fine too. But at least I really do pride myself on, I invest money, and what I say is what I try and do, or what I believe in at least. And that is from my research. So, I do pride myself on that, because some people think they're going to try and gain some edge coming on or tweeting stuff and trying to mind fuck you. And that's not what I'm here for. So, Cody Bellinger, let's talk about our boy. You kind of briefly mentioned him. I think that there's questions that you kind of need to ask yourself when looking at him. Was last year like kind of like as bad as it's going to get with a 210 average? The last two seasons, the batting average has been really bad, the strikeout rate, the plate discipline, et cetera. But even with that $13 he earns, he goes to an improving Cubs lineup. Not that it's better than the Dodgers, so downgrade there, but potentially more playing time. He's going to move up in that lineup because it's not as strong as the Dodgers. We're now as the second year removed from the shoulder surgery, so if you have confidence that could potentially help out as well, as the prove it contract being a motivational factor, change of scenery could be beneficial. Also, he hits the shit out of the ball on the right hand side. So the 47% pull rate, is that going to benefit him in the BABIPs with the 165 BABIP and the 210 BABIP? So could there be luck on his side? I don't know. He did earn $13 last year, and he's going five rounds later than he did last year.
He did not lose money on the ADP. So after everything, and obviously people deserve to give him shit, because especially anybody like myself who was expecting at least 65% of 2019, which was more than most people did, and I was in it. Old takes exposed me, if you'd like, but it didn't work out. And this year, I'm I don't want to say ambivalent. I think there might be at some point that I just, my bias kind of kicks in and I start getting Bellinger and I let silly things like, he was the first person to report to Cubs camp, like, you know, get to me, because I'm really into a lot of those, sort of outside of the box narratives. But at the end of the day, it's just a matter of price and how I'm feeling during the day in a specific draft. Like, I have not been drafting a lot of them, but I have grabbed a couple of shares lately. So we'll see. I'm just, you know, I don't have a, put it like this. I just don't, maybe it's because I'm burned. I just don't have a super strong opinion.
You know, okay, before we move on to the next tier, the last thing I will say kind of reminds me of another player this year, and it's Javi Baez. So Javi Baez was going in fifth round last year, I believe, and he's going in rounds 11 and 12 this year. And then with Bellinger, I think Bellinger was going in rounds 10 or 11, and now this year it's like 14, 15. They can both return a profit, and they're both – the draft stock is just falling. So remember, this is fantasy baseball, and they do provide fantasy relevancy in multiple categories. Mm-hmm. Moving on.
By the way, one thing I did discover, Javier Baez, I mean, I knew this, but I didn't really know it when I started looking at like outside zone,
oh boy,
chase rate and things like man, he was the worst by a lot. He was so bad. It's really hard to invest in guys like that.
I just drafted my first piece of them today in a four, honey.
Nice.
The one I've been sending you, the one I showed you earlier.
It's
today.
A good team. It's a good team.
Let's start off with the next tier, tier six. Mm-hmm. Break it down. Break it down for the people.
All right. So I did mention Yoshida. He actually goes and is drafted in this tier. I just have Yoshida above in my VDP. But this would be like Andrew Benintendi, Whit Merrifield, Ramon Laureano. Lourdes Gurriel now in Arizona. You got a couple of A's in Seth Brown and Esteban Ruiz. You got Brian De La Cruz, possibly full-timer, maybe full-timer. A Dodger who's also second base eligible, who I have a feeling we're going to talk about here, Gavin Lux. We've got Will Myers, Jock Peterson, a platoon guy. Randall Grichuk currently out. Hopefully should be ready sometime in April. And then Austin Meadows. Who do you want to start with here in this tier? We're going to go kind of lighter as we get into the later tiers, and we'll highlight specific guys, but let's spend a few minutes here.
Benintendi, really like him. I think he should be bumped up into the other tier. So he's going to be hitting second for the White Sox. That's an improvement in the team context from a WRC plus standpoint. And then when you look at park factor, I tweeted out earlier this winter that Andrew Benintendi is the most beneficial hitter when it comes to having the biggest shift in home run park factor of any player going from one home stadium or park to another. So Kauffman Stadium is negative 21% in HR factor compared to Guaranteed Rate Field in Chicago, which is plus 24%. So that's a plus 46% differential, the biggest for any hitter. So you do, I wouldn't say that he goes to some career high or a new or gets close to that 20 to 21, but I don't think we see what we saw last year, which was in the single digits. So that goes up in my mind. And then, he's another lefty. I know that he can spray the ball a little bit more. He's not as aggressive with the pull rate, but for me, the ground ball rate's high enough to where he's going to get just a little bit of luck. And he is somebody that has good contact skills. So yeah, improvement in team context. He's going to be hitting pretty much at the top of the lineup every day in Chicago. And I like the park factor. So I think that the recency bias of how terrible the back of his baseball card looks from 2022 is being overly looked at right now too much. It's too aggressive on the distaste, I should say.
Yeah. And he was crushing it for a while. I mean, he kind of changed his profile a little bit. He never was a big power guy per se. But Andrew Benintendi last season, I mean, five home runs, obviously that's pretty depressing. He hasn't hit 20 since his first full season way back in 2017. That's the year he went 2020. If I recall correctly, it was either 2018 or 2019 where he was like a second round pick or third round pick or something like that. I remember getting burned. That one really stung. ISO under 100. That's rough as well. But man, he really has cut down on the strikeouts. I mean, there was a period of time like 2019, 2020, it wasn't really healthy. 2020, he basically didn't play.
Yeah.
But last year he was under 15%. It was his first time doing so on the strikeout rate. This is Andrew Benintendi. This is a little bit closer to his levels from the minor leagues and from early in his career with Boston. So he's a guy with good plate discipline. I don't think he hit 304 by accident. Even his first kind of three or first two and a half full seasons, he was essentially like a 290 guy. So could fit in here hitting second nicely. Of course, this is just what roster resource shows. I mean, maybe Luis Robert hits second, maybe Yasmani Grandal, the second coming, you know, on base monster hits second. I mean, we don't really know how it shakes out, but that seems like the best spot for him. It really seems like a good spot. And if that is the case, indeed, there's no Jose Abreu in the mix, but if Tim Anderson is healthy, and then you got Luis Robert Jr. and then Eloy Jimenez there, I mean, this is a good looking, this is a kind of a good looking offense. And again, I think we talked about it last week, like hopefully they fire their like, you know, training and conditioning people, but they need some nice bounce back in the health department. It was just so uncanny that everybody was unhealthy all at the same time last season, these White Sox, and this is before Benintendi even got there. Maybe there's some positive regression in this realm. I know it doesn't work like that, but it sure would be nice to see.
Oh, hey, math would disagree with you, and so would some of the people that just abide by just good old-fashioned juju. No Tony La Russa. And I feel like a lot of these – I really do feel like a lot of these players are coming in with a chip on their shoulder this year in Chicago. They've got a lot to prove, and they are very well aware of the shit basically that's being talked about them in between the press and the fans and social media. So I think they're coming into camp well-prepared and with a chip on their shoulder. So yeah, he's hitting second. I would like, why can't Brandon Nimmo again, sorry, Brandon Nimmo and Mets fans. He's going how much later?
Ariel Cohen has just turned off the podcast.
Andrew Benintendi's going three rounds later than Brandon Nimmo. So 1v1, give me Nintendo, give me Brandon, Andrew Benintendi over Brandon Nimmo 1v1. You want to make that one too? I'll take it.
Yeah, I think I have them rather close. I think I think I'm with you there.
If they're that close, there shouldn't be a 50 plus round pick gap.
There's just inherent value just being a leadoff man, maybe more so in real life, but you're hitting in front of Lindor and Alonso and these guys in here. I mean, you kind of just roll into 90 plus runs in your sleep. So there is that sort of inherent value. Plus he does take a lot of walks. He's good at, wow. You just got me back to Nimmo.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, but no. Well, but again, though, Verdugo and Benintendi are also very elite when it comes to getting on base, at least from.
And so I agree with you that they're all like the same guy. They're all similar. So exactly. Why take?
We like tapioca Nimmo. Pudding. Okay. What about? Okay. So in this tier, though, we also have some other interesting guys. So Whit Merrifield's coming into his first full season with Toronto. Michael Conforto's moving over to San Francisco. I know that you have some love for Lourdes Gurriel. If you want to kind of give the floor with him, you mentioned Brian De La Cruz though. There's reports that he's not even the starting outfielder though. Jesus Sanchez is kind of the word that I'm hearing that's getting that job.
Oh boy, I love it. Yeah, I love
and I'm with that too, baby.
Yeah, Brian De La Cruz had a nice absolutely. Stretch, right? I mean, even 2021 in Miami. If you remember, he like came on at the end of the season. He basically almost hit 300, hit a bunch of homers. And he looks the part and hits for a little bit above average power, had a 12% barrel rate, 47% hard hit rate last year. So the boy can hit. He can mash a little bit. Former Houston prospect. But they got some players here, right? And if Jesus Sanchez is the same guy that we saw explode 2 years ago, I mean, it could easily be a platoon. And if that is the case, it would make sense, right? One hits lefties well, the other one's a lefty, hits righties well. Like, why would Brian De La Cruz, a part-timer platoon guy, why would he be in this range unless, say, he can hit 30 home runs as a platoon guy like Jock Peterson, who's kind of the only guy who can do that?
Yeah, and people might be thinking or questioning why, you know, De La Cruz doesn't have an everyday job, and it's because Jorge Soler is for sure going to be the DH, right? And then one guy has a contract, that's Abisail Garcia, and then Jazz Chisholm, he's the center fielder, and that's inevitable. So there's only one spot to be had, and Jesus Sanchez is the lefty, so it kind of does cause a conundrum. And if there is a conundrum, this current draft price is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Who else do you want to go on here?
Ramon Lariano, real quick. Sure. So, by the way, just to quote my our good friend Scott Jenstad, A's guy, Ramon Laureano sucks. According to him, Ramon Laureano sucks. And I like to trust him on most things, as I do. But also, when you're kind of a jaded A's fan and just kind of used to just, you know, you pay attention so closely and you pay attention to all the negatives, I think something like that could pop out. And granted, Ramon Laureano, yeah, I mean, right, he was suspended. The dude hit 211 last year in nearly 400 plate appearances. So he's just one of those guys, again, he's one of those guys that if you haven't already built, if you've already built sort of a risky team, he's probably not a good fit. But the upside is there, specifically if he does end up getting traded somewhere. And it almost seems like that might be the case. He does have above average power. He's basically has an 11% barrel rate, a 40% hard hit rate over the last couple seasons, and has had some bad luck, you know, BABIP and average, and hasn't really just been able to grab a hold of any sort of consistency. And now here he is, 27, turning 28, and just kind of still stuck with the same team. But he's got power, he's got speed. He can get it done. Maybe it's just like a turnaround, a new team environment that he might need.
The projections that you see for Ramon Laureano could be the end of the season stats for somebody like Adelis Garcia. Where Ramon Laureano is going, it feels like he's just really easy going to be able to provide you some sort of profit on your return on investment here. And I think this year, finally, it's inevitable that he will get traded. So once he does, he's going to get a positive shift in park factor. He's going to get a positive bump in team context. And he is a multi-contributor in the two categories that we love the most, and that's power and speed. And for whatever reason, for me, you kind of mentioned some of the negative things about him that do leave a bad taste in your mouth. The suspension, dudes running out of the dugout fighting the Astros because someone's talking shit about his family members, you know, and I think that there's a chance that he does have this motivation, so to speak, to just kind of get the hell out of Dodge, which is Oakland. And with what he does in the power and speed, I like guys like this where they're going. I know that I've kind of crapped on a lot of outfielders that steal more than 10 bases, which Laureano does, but he does provide the power. And although that he might have a bad batting average, and I love the guys that have good plate discipline with high batting averages, you build that early so you can take on a guy like Laureano. And I love that about him because he does provide you just enough everywhere else. Even though it is the Oakland A's, he will be playing every day, as long as he's healthy, and he will be at the top and in the thick of the crappy lineup until he has departed. And the crazy thing is with the A's, it's not a, well, we got to wait until the trade deadline. Dude, they can move him tomorrow. Like, they are the Oakland A's. They could trade. There could be, knock on wood, a player on the Mets, on the Dodgers, on whatever team gets hurt tomorrow in spring training, and you can see somebody, you know, breaking news on Laureano moving camps in spring. So, and a simple thing like that, let's just hypothetically, if Ramon Laureano was on pick a random team, Vlad, where does he go? How much higher does he go?
If he's not tomorrow, on the Pirates, Nationals, or Tigers, then.
And the Pirates and Nationals and Tigers wouldn't be trading for him, most likely.
Yes.
So if he gets hurt on.
I mean, 50 spots higher easily. Nemo range.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was Brandon Nimmo that got hurt and they traded for him. Yeah. Where would he go on the Mets, right? So, they did bring in Tommy Pham's.
Well, I will say Laureano, he was a 288 hitter through his first two seasons, basically what ended up being approximately a full season. So it was maybe like 650 plate appearances. Obviously, it's lots changed since that time, since the pandemic and whatnot. What I'm seeing here is a potential, especially if he does get traded, of a peak prime Will Myers type of season. So if you look back, Will Myers stats with the Padres 2016, 2017, when he was going 28-28, when he went 30-20 with a not so great batting average, 25-28% strikeout rate, 9-10% walk rate. That's kind of what you're looking at here is at a peak, and he could surprise you with a decent average. I think change of scenery would be nice. So some of these guys like Brian Reynolds, like Ramon Laureano, guys who, I don't know, may or may not get traded, but man, if they move, I think that these are guys where value can absolutely skyrocket.
Yeah, absolutely. This is kind of where you're sort of taking your shot on your fifth outfielder. Randall Grichuk was in this tier, but he's hurt. He's going to miss 6 weeks. So I think that he's pretty much undraftable for me at this point. And I kind of mentioned last week how these Rockies hitters are just, they're truly a headache. They almost, I just don't have the time really and the patience for what they're going to do on the road and how you're going to suffice for some of them. So if somebody's injured, it's likely just a no for me right now until upon arrival. Maybe I think you'll probably have him in a fab article a week or two prior if he's, you know, coming, going to be healthy and, you know, opening up off the injury list, potentially at Coors, right? A full week, you know, something like that. And then with Jock Peterson, I mentioned time. Time is very important in our lives. And I really don't have the time for Jock Peterson as
ain't
much
nobody
as
got
I
time
do.
For that.
We don't got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. So just trying to figure out, am I starting him Monday through Thursday? Am I starting him Friday through Sunday? If I'm not starting him this week, who am I cutting him for? Are these guys worth cutting him for? There's a lot. He's an entire Rubik's Cube, Jock Peterson is, when it comes to NFBC formats. And I don't need that, especially with some of the categories that he could be deficient in. So no. Gavin Lux, we have to talk about him before moving on to the next year.
Can I just real quick mention sure. on, man, you were just, geez, you were just talking about, oh, Grichuk and the Rockies yes. and not yep. having time for things. And Jock, man, what is the phenomenon with, and now everyone's off the Rockies. Like nobody wants to deal with the Giants platoons. Right. Nobody wants to deal with Colorado, right? It was like the heyday. Like everybody, you just like drafted Colorado guys. You didn't care. They would just mash and you would just deal with it. Now, I guess we just get smarter and just don't want to deal with maybe the way NFBC is set up. I don't know. But I'm looking at the schedule, by the way. I don't even see, oh my goodness, I don't even see like a full, they're like screwing with them. I don't see a full first week until like late May for the Rockies for a homestand, for a 7-game like Monday through Sunday homestand. Maybe I'll look at it again, but that's wild. They're all like partial.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? If anything, maybe, and hopefully, kudos to them. Hopefully, it helps their away splits. Maybe they're not as aggressive this year because they're not at a Coors for as long early in the season. But, yeah, so Grichuk being injured right now, right, you're kind of just cross them off, right? Easy.
Yeah, I mean, they're like anyone, there becomes a point where, you know, 80, 100 picks past ADP. Yeah, is like, hey, go. Yeah, depends on the format, whatever. But give us the Lux deluxe redux because he is – he's added some poundage, right? He's going to mash this year finally.
He's got some meat on him. That's one thing. So best shape of life. We're being kind of facetious when we say that. But he is motivated and he does have the high pedigree, right? But the pedigree can wear off as time goes on if you're not kind of showing up and kind of flashing it. And he hasn't done that. But you know what? He showed some things last year to me. And it was sustainability, and it was sustainability in with a double digit walk rate, which we love to see. That's something that's huge for me, especially analyzing a young hitter. And then the strikeout rate is above average. That's two seasons in a row. So that he's improved on that. So, well, actually he's improved on it every year. So it began in 2019, 29%, 27%, 21%, 20%. And I think with him being a lefty, we're not talking about that enough. He's lefty. The averages for these lefties, obviously the pull rates are going to help. How much they were being shifted is going to matter. But he did pull the ball 42% of the time last year. So could we give him a little bit more on the batting average? People are going to argue and say no because he had a 341 BABIP last year, right? So where do we – is that a seesaw act of was he lucky? How much more lucky is he going to get this year? Can we find some common ground there? Maybe, especially with somebody like this that is showing maturity at the plate. And he has had some decent ISOs in 2020, albeit a shortened season, small sample, 175, a little bit below average for middle infielder. So what do we want to see? We want to see the barrel rate go up, the hard hit rate hard, but he was hitting the ball on the ground just a little bit too much at 48%. But he's going to be hitting in a good lineup. He's going to be playing every day. He doesn't have any mind games this year, so he's going to be able to focus on what he's going to need to focus on, and that's hitting. He's played shortstop in the past, so the whole people, it's, oh, I don't know if he can play defense anymore. Look at him over here and over there. No, he's never been an outfielder. He's played plenty of fucking shortstop. He's fine. He's totally fine. Like, Come on, just stop with that. What was his future greatest prospect report fielding? A 50? Is that okay? I think so. I'm not worried about him losing playing time to Miguel Rojas because he can't play shortstop. If they were saying that he was going to try and figure things out this year in the outfield again, then I would have these concerns, but I don't. So I think with the mental attitude with him and the motivational factor that he has coming in, the good team context, another year as a now a bit of a seasoned kind of coming into his own, why can't we see 15-15? I don't think that really is asking too much, especially because he gets on base and he's not going to just damage your team context when it comes to runs being on the Dodgers. We've been drafting him here at this draft range, round 15, round 16, for 3 years in a row now. And last year was the best he's looked yet.
Glimpses. Exactly. They're glimpses. First round pick, Dodgers first round pick back in 2016. Like, I wasn't really that good at prospects analysis back then, but like, man, I really thought there was just something about him. And maybe just silly things like kind of the swagger, the plate approach. There were things that I thought in the beginning when he first came up that he was going to be a star, like a really good player. I also think he got mixed up in a little bit of all the, some of the like off field stuff. I don't want to speculate. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I have like inside information, but like, the starlight, right? The stuff that kind of, I think took Bellinger away a little bit, that it does, affect Matt Kemp for a little bit there when he was dating Rihanna back in the day. Like, there's just something, I don't know. And so hopefully he'll just get back to just playing baseball. I think he does hit easily over 10 home runs this season. I think it's kind of, I don't want to say a lock, nothing's a lock, but
sure.
Yeah, so you have a little confidence in the power, then it sounds like, although that's going to go up, obviously, right? He's getting a little bit bigger. He's trying to be more conscious about, barreling up the ball. He's talking about all these things too. And you can kind of tell he's got a smirk on his face right now in camp. And on top of that, let's not forget that this is somebody that has provided above average batting average, which we forget about. And if he is a little bit buried in the lineup, it's a good lineup. And I don't think he's going to be hitting 7th, 8th or 9th, to be honest with you. And sprint speed, 94th percentile, 88th percentile. So for the analytic nerds there, he's fast.
He's 24. He'll get better. That's what it comes down to.
Juan Soto Rune thinks. I don't know what to tell you. He's young, man. Like, some back in the day, if we would have been looking at the trajectory of Gavin Lux and at his age right now, we'd have said, whoa, dude, wait until his age 27 year. This dude is going to be just incredible.
I'm hoping. I'm really hoping for really good things from Gavin Lux this season.
Before we move on, Will Myers is the last. He's similar to Benintendi. Huge park shift. Park factor shift when it comes to power. So he's going to play every single day on the Reds, gets a big bump in power, should get the volume. If he stays healthy, I think that he could be a good pick too.
Yeah. And that's perfect. Segues into our 250 to 300. This is rounds 17 through 20. And right off the top, Jake Fraley is in that zone. I've been seeing him drafted in this range in the 250 to 275 range, usually around like round 17, 18, not too far after Will Myers. I think I tweeted a few weeks ago that I wouldn't be surprised if Jake Fraley like straight up beats Will Myers. Sounds a little crazy if you really think about it, considering Jake Fraley really hasn't done much in his professional career and is kind of been a platoon guy, right? He was back with Seattle. He's a lefty bat who pretty much only hits righties. His power last year was ridiculously horrible. I think he was hitting the ball at like 85 average exit velocity with like a sub 6% barrel rate, but he's not a bad prospect either. He was pretty decent in the past. He's a big, really good at good plate discipline, good at getting on base, I think, at least. Maybe not with the strikeouts, but he's like a 10 to 13% walk rate guy. And it's a great park for him. He can establish himself. I think he's one of those guys that can possibly be in the lineup against lefties as well. I think he's somebody that can lead off on that team. I don't think TJ Friedl is necessarily the answer there. John Legeza earmuffs on the Friedl there. But yeah, I kind of really like Jake Fraley. It's really hard not to at least especially when it's late round guys, when there are late round guys, to not at least consider investing in guys that are going to play half their games in such an advantageous hitting park.
Yeah. So if you covered the name and said, we have player X that should be leading off on the strong side of a platoon that had a 208 ISO last year. I know that you mentioned that the barrel rate and the hard hit rate was down, but the isolated power was 208 above average. So you got a leadoff hitter with a 208 ISO that does a little bit of running, has a decent, a little bit of pop in the best park for half of his games against right-handed pitching leading off. You'd kind of like that, right? Especially if you threw on double-digit walk rates over the last couple seasons. Look at the aggregate over the last 2 years, 352, 344 OBPs. He's getting on base. He should be scoring runs. I was kind of into this guy in Seattle as he was kind of having some shine to him in this same. Little bit of a pedigree. And it never kind of, we forget and it, the shine kind of becomes rust. And
oh, I didn't forget. I didn't forget, baby.
That sort of happens with players, and it happened with Jake Fraley. And now, cover the name and kind of play that scenario out that I just said. And I think that you should be okay if this is your fifth outfielder.
In some cases could be fourth, depends how you build. Yeah, I'm on board with that. ADP of last I looked was 300. I don't know what it is off the bat, but I've seen him in higher stakes drafts getting taken in the 250, 270 range. Actually, there's a lot of names here in this range that I think will outperform or should be higher ADP than the guys that we had just talked about previously. But tell me anyone that sticks out to you among these names. You've got Jesse Winker in Milwaukee now, switch hitter, kind of a last year's bum guy. The team didn't like him. Jorge Soler, another last year's bum, who is going to be hitting in the middle of the lineup. Maybe not the best hitting park, but you're going to have Luis Arias and Jen Segura probably on base in front of you a lot, not to mention Jess Chisholm if he isn't knocking them out of the park. So you got Winker, Soler, Charlie Blackmon. I don't know. I think he's kind of sailing off into the sunset there. You got Austin Hayes, doesn't do anything for me. Same with Trey Mancini, Chris Taylor, whatever. Lane Thomas, meh. That's high stakes analysis right there for you. A little meh.
No, we're in agreement on somebody, so I think that we should highlight that person because he pops. And in regards to looking at your differential from VDP to ADP, and that is Jorge Soler. He's going to play every single day that his body physically allows him to. He has above average power by quite a bit. Career ISO of 217. He's got a good on base percentage for his career. It's 327. But like I said, I don't think the park really matters with his power. As long as he's healthy, he's going to play pretty much every day in the middle of the lineup. And I know it's the Marlins watered down lineup, but it will be built around a couple of decent pieces. If you expect a tiny little bit of a bounce back from Avisail Garcia, and if and when Jazz Chisholm does stay healthy this season and play 150 plus games, those little things around him will be just enough for the RBIs not to drain you. So I think his counting stats will be okay. And he hits the ball really, really hard. So good things can happen when you're playing every day and hit the ball hard.
Real quick on Soler. He's only 30. He's a lot younger than I thought for some reason.
I thought Jorge Soler was 40 and I thought Ramon Laureano was 38. So they are 28 and 30, not 38 and 48, 40.
Yeah, and so he was hurt for a good chunk of last season. He did have a 322 ISO against lefties, of course, small sample last year, but sure 240 ISO against lefties. And if you recall, this is a gentleman who smashed, 48 home runs in 2019. Granted, it was that season, whatever the ball, with the happy fun ball. But yeah, maybe not the best plate discipline. He's a 27% strikeout rate guy, but whatever, doesn't matter. Just recognize that you could be taking a little bit hit on the batting average. If you really need that late round power, I think he is one of the best sources. I will mention one other guy that not only he's in this range, but I've now seen him go even higher and he is comparable to him, and that's Adam Duvall. So how do you compare the two? What do you think? I had a little like roto crush on Adam Duvall where I was just drafting him everywhere I possibly could after he signed. There was just some like light bulb that went on for me. When I think back to the season that he had a couple years ago, By the way, it was a really weird season for the Braves where he had that massive differential, like 67 runs and almost double the RBIs. He had 113 RBIs, but he had 38 home runs. That was just 2021, literally just a couple seasons ago. These two guys are comparable, older guys. He's 4 years older, by the way, Adam Duvall. But I don't know, something about him on the Red Sox uniform gets me kind of excited in a very fantasy oriented family way.
I think that the main difference between the two is Jorge Soler is going to hit higher in his lineup.
Yeah, where's, by the way, I don't even remember where.
That's it. That's all I got for you.
How many home runs? How many home runs does each guy hit, and how many games do you think they play?
So I think Jorge Soler, like I said, he's going to get driven into the ground. As long as he stays healthy, he's pretty much going to just DH all day, every single day, as long as, you know, days off given and stuff like that, you know, mixing and matching, kind of trying to, you know, rotate through and give some guys some time at DH and give him a breather. But for the most part, if he's healthy, I think he plays every day and hits cleanup for the Marlins. And with Duvall, wouldn't we need multiple paths for him to kind of climb up a lineup? Whereas Soler, we know that he has power and we know he's going to hit where he's going to hit in the lineup, and that's cleanup.
Well, I think outside of Devers, Rafael Devers, I mean, Duvall, like if something happened to Devers, if he got traded, I think Duvall would lead this team in home runs. Honestly, I think he's somebody that, I think he does have a path. I'll tell you why, because 38-year-old Justin Turner is currently the DH and hitting fourth. And granted, if he's at DH, less likely to get hurt, so he can kind of stay out there a little bit more, but there is a path, I think, to Duvall possibly hitting fourth. I mean, he's almost 35. I don't know how long he lasts. It's not going to help you in average, but yeah. By the way, there's possibility of things going terribly here in Boston. I hate to say it, but like, man, it does not. It kind of, there's days that it like looks good, and then I'm kind of hopeful. Maybe it's because there are former Dodgers on there with Kike Hernandez and Justin Turner and Verdugo. But like, what if Yoshida is a bust? What if, you know, Tristan Casas has like a 35% strikeout? I mean, I think he's a decent hitter, but like there are lots of
Devers. What if Devers had an injury? How would that lineup look without him? Yeah. So the one thing I will say is I think that it shakes out, like even if you did do the splits thing with the lefties. So if if there was a starting left-hander on the mound, you wanted to bump up Duvall. I feel like Kike goes ahead of him either way in that regard against lefties. And then, I think Verdugo hits first or second, regardless of handedness. And if things do work out with Yoshida, he hits in front of Verdugo. So, yeah, I think it's going to take an injury or two for Duvall to kind of move up. Either way, to answer your question, though, the big difference is Soler's currently hitting higher in the lineup, in his respective lineup.
We'll run through the guys, basically your end gamers, 21 to 30. We'll run over those guys in the next 10 minutes. But just kind of to end things on this tier, we pretty much mentioned this kind of a meh tier. Mm-hmm. I do have some hope for if you do need some late round speed, I think Garrett Mitchell for the Brewers, I think he will be, he's a lefty bat, will probably be in a platoon to start the season. And if he doesn't suck, stay up in the majors. But I think he's a sneaky guy to steal 20-plus bases, so I'm kind of interested in him. And just wanted to mention that if Oswaldo Cabrera somehow does get close to full playing time, he's a good switch hitter. We saw him down the stretch last year. He was a very big helper in the fantasy, basically for the fantasy teams down the stretch last season. I think if Aaron Hicks just ends up sucking or gets hurt, I think there's a path there for Oswaldo. So just wanted to mention those two guys.
Yeah, definitely with Oswaldo, continue to monitor all the news and stuff that's coming out of camp too, because they've got a lot of position competition, I believe. I don't think a lot of things are set in stone there. Just keep an eye on him, because if he does crack that starting lineup and stick and kind of gets off to a good start, you could catch a little bit of lightning there. I agree.
So now looking at outfielders after rounds 20 and 15 teamers, this is after pick 300. Just wanted to see if there's anyone that really stands out to you as far as guys that can really provide a serious profit. You know, we already talked about Adam Duvall. We know Avisel Garcia is one of those kind of yo-yo guys year to year. And when he's on, he'll profit for you and you'll get a nice profit at that 320 ADP. You got Marcelo Zuna, who obviously has a lot of power. McCutchen, I think, is really solid and worth it hitting in the middle. Even if it's a bad lineup, you know kind of what you're going to get from McCutchen, which is like 20 homers, a few steals, and some runs in RBI. Matt Gastrzemski hitting second, even if it's San Francisco, that's worth something, at least from a runs perspective. He's got a little bit of power. So there are some names in here that are interesting. Obviously, Joey Gallo with big power as well. But who are these, like, big baby profit centers? Like, if I was to throw out names.
There's two.
Why don't I want to ask just you? I don't want to even assume. I want to know who are these guys and who are they and are you into them?
Yes, of course. There's two of them. The first, I actually think you might be into both of them too. Oscar Colas, so the rookie that's going to end up taking the job in the outfield for the White Sox. So you're going to have Luis Robert, Andrew Benintendi, and Oscar Colas in the outfield with Eloy Jimenez DHing full time, believe it or not. And when that happens, or if it happens, I should say, I don't want to get too confident, he's going to end up being able to provide a profit. But the other one is right above him, and that is Edward Olivares. If the projection systems believe in what they're projecting, and if you believe that now that there is not some sort of logjam, albeit how hard that is to believe with the Kansas City Royals.
There is no logjam anymore.
There is no logjam, right? So if he remains healthy and you are supposed to, let's say, we'll bump up the playing time on the projected plate appearances and games played for Edward Olivares, he's going to absolutely smash where he's going.
Just give the man some consistent freaking playing time. Like if Drew Waters is now out with an oblique injury, he's now out for several weeks, and you've got Michael Taylor traded. Like you've got Samad Taylor projected in this outfield, who actually may be a sneaky fab guy during the course of the season. But you better damn give Edward Olivares some playing time and not shuffle him up and, you know, up and down the majors. If not, then trade the guy or just make him full-time DH, but whatever you have to do, he's going to be a nice bat in the middle of that lineup. So I'm with you. Oscar Colas. Yeah. I was reading an article basically right before we jumped on here, how basically they want him to win that job. They don't want him to be too confident. They know he has the talent. He only has like seven games at AAA, was mashing at AA, but he's somebody that, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he needs to win that right field job. He's the favorite, but needs to have that kind of flash that talent and just show his well-roundedness. But he's one of those guys, I think, that people are interested in his upside.
Who would be your favorite old person out of this entire tier? So somebody that's, I guess we're going to call 28, 29, but old now, but somebody like that. So not one of these young guys that would be, is there somebody boring that you think is in air quotes kind of safe here that you would be like, all right, I've kind of built this team and I just need somebody that's going to play and I'm going to get
interesting.
My ball. Is it McCutcheon?
Well, yes. I do like McCutcheon. I've been drafting him in DCs. I've been drafting him even in underdogs. So I'm in it. Just feels good. Like him being back in Pittsburgh. And I think he's going to be just fine. I don't think he's going to hit for that high of an average. I don't think he's going to have any sort of career renaissance, but I think he's a solid bat. AJ Pollock, again, if the guy just stays healthy, kind of a nice platoon guy hitting against lefties. I think you can use him correctly, pick him up in fab here and there. So those would be the couple of guys that I'd be most interested in. There's one we haven't talked about.
Oh?
Man in the news. A man that now has more path to playing time because Taylor Trammell is now hurt. A guy that is tapping everything, mental, physical, former first round pick, very polarizing. The man, the myth, the legend, Jared Kelenic.
Yeah.
Where are you at? Because I just drafted him in my 1K DC as my outfield five.
I've got a couple pieces of him already, and I think that I kind of want to buy back in. This is somebody that possesses power and speed, and it's somebody that's possessing that sort of skill set going super late where if it doesn't work out and you're starting off the season with a 30%+ K rate and you're noticing that the plate discipline and contact and there's nothing that's changed, there's nothing that's looked that has improved, then move on. Cut him. Fuck it. Move on. But there's still a very, very high chance. I wouldn't say that it's this season, but there's still in the range of outcomes that he pops and figures it out. I mean, even Bryce Harper and Mike Trout in their first season, albeit this isn't his second go of it, it took them some time. So Again, Fernando Tatis, Juan Soto, some of these dudes kind of screwed up our perception on what players are supposed to do right away. He hasn't been lucky, so to speak. He's been one of the unluckier players. 167 BABIP.
There's nowhere to go but up. He's literally been the worst major league hitter. But when you are when you're top prospect and you have such expectations and you literally hit rock bottom, there really isn't any place to go from here. It's either that or out of baseball. I don't see that happening.
So he did in 181 plate appearances last year, 54 games in the yo-yo, 13.6% barrel rate. Do we like that?
I like barrel rates over 12%.
His launch angle's kind of meaty. Dude, it takes time. Baseball's hard, people. And now that injury really does kind of paves things a little smoother, right? Makes things a little bit easier for the path for him to just kind of, I don't think the pressure there too, the pressure for him to just not come out and be Bryce Harper right away now is
from the bottom of the lineup. No pressure.
Yeah. This is where I'm willing to take my shots because like I said, I have a good batting average right now. I don't need to worry about that. So for me, I can take my especially because by now, I haven't drafted anyone that can steal a base. So I need to take my chance on Jared Kelenic.
That makes sense. That's part of the reason why I did draft him as well in mine. I felt very short on speed and I did not want to go the Miles Straw route. So that's just me.
Right.
Anything to close up the show? Any other outfielders you want to mention? By the way, Lamont Wade Jr. says he's healthy. Best shape of his life. That's just whatever. You're not even going to draft him in top. He's ADP outside the 450, but I kind of like him.
DCs and stuff like that, I get it, right? So, but again, Dodgers, that's makes things complicated. The guys here that I do like, there's two of them. Jesus Sanchez, we kind of talked about a little bit earlier. They've come out and said, Skip Schumacher has said during Fan Fest, before spring training started, that he said, Jesus Sanchez is my starting left fielder, in quotes. So do that with whatever you may, but people were buying in on him and the power and stuff like that. And sometimes for young hitters coming into their second year, it's a game of adjustments. You do well, then the pitcher does well. They figure you out. Take your time, take your break, take a breath, figure out what you need to do to try and figure out how to, make your adjustments back. And hopefully he's figured that out. If so, he should stick at least against right-handed pitchers on the strong side of a platoon. He does possess, we've seen some power out of him. And then the other guy would be Max Kepler. I don't care if he gets traded or not. In Minnesota, out of Minnesota, if he stays healthy, I think that he definitely outproduces ADP. So
a great baseball name. A guy like Max Kepler.
Max, baby. Let's go, Max.
Let's go already. So that was nice. That was a nice wrap up of the outfielders. Next week, we're going to talk about some starting pitchers. We're going to really dive in to the starting pitchers. We'll not get to them all. Could be a two-part show. We'll see. Maybe we'll do better with time management. Hey, we try. We try every single week. But we thank you all very much for joining us. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy here what looks like to be like the end of February and enjoy the beginning of spring training exhibition game. So final words, anything you got for the gang here?
No, we are now, I didn't say it at the beginning of the pod, so I'll say it now. We are now only 4 weeks away from drafting in Las Vegas for our live high stakes fantasy baseball draft. So this is just the most exciting time of year for me.
Love it.
Getting the draft preparation and then not only just the drafts and stuff like that, but preparing to see all of our friends in the fantasy community, right? We're flying from all over America and Canada. So it really is. It's an annual trip and it's a holiday season for us all. So we're doing all the work that we possibly can to try and provide you good content over at ftnfantasy.com. So if you're listening to this and have not joined us already, please reach out to Vlad and I if you have any questions over on Twitter. And then if not, if you don't have any questions and just want to join, use code FTN pod for 20% off. We thank you so much. And please subscribe and rate and review the pod.
And if you do get a chance and are interested in Vegas, come out. We're really friendly bunch. We don't bite. Okay, maybe Rob Silver bites, but that's a whole different story. And that's where we'll end it here. So thank you very much for joining. For Matthew, Maddie Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.